دنیای ما، جامعه ما.
Our world, our community with Debbie Amini.
سلام، دوباره منو بپذیرید به قسمت دوم برنامه امروز. خوش آمدید. در خدمت میهمان عزیز رودی راکمن هستیم که معروفیت ایشون به خاطر فعالیت‌های بسیار گسترده‌ای هست که برای مبارزه با آنتی سمیتیسم، یهودی ستیزی انجام میدن. رودی، thank you again for being with us today. I want to go back to the fight and how should we fight. I believe that a lot of people would like to join this fight against anti-Semitism. I think a lot of us do agree that it has been always existed and never went away, but we have to definitely prevent from something happening like Holocaust, something that major. I am personally against any ideology that makes one group of people feel superior to another group. I believe in world peace through coexistence in harmony among all and all. Obviously, not everyone has your platform to voice their education globally. And I think that what happened with Whoopi Goldberg, although it wasn't right, but could have been used as an opportunity to bring education to people instead of giving her literally 2 weeks of vacation. But anyways, talking about people, individuals, what do you think that people should do to prevent another rise of anti-Semitism movement?
Yeah, I mean, there's not one answer, but it's shifting pop culture. I gave the example earlier of different minority groups that in the past few decades, right, 60, 70 years, were able to shift the reality within, let's say, America from one where Black people were segregated based on their color of skin, or women didn't have a right to vote based on their sex, to a reality that today, if you say something racist or sexist in political and intellectual spaces, it's something automatically rejected. It doesn't mean that there's no more racism or that there's no more sexism. There's still many more things to do in order to achieve this reality of unity and injustice, you know, not just peace, but really have justice within the systemic foundations of a society. But in order to change things when it comes to anti-Semitism, we have to shift pop culture. We have to educate the society from the bottom up, from the youth, eventually them getting into positions of power, and getting them to realize what is right and what is wrong when it comes to the Jewish people. Who are the Jewish people? What have we gone through? And, you know, it's not just preventing a Holocaust. There's many other types of Holocaust that happened to the Jewish people before the one in Nazi Germany that spread around Europe. There's pogroms, there's inquisitions, there's destruction of Jewish civilization that happened 2 times. There's many things that the Jewish people have faced constantly throughout history. And in order to prevent it, we have to take the power back into our hands, narrate our own story, empower our own community, create coalitions and awareness with the world. In the same way there's freedom of speech, there should be a society's freedom to react to that speech. And if that speech is bad, a society should know the difference between right and wrong. And so I agree with you that the best thing to have done with Whoopi is to take this as an opportunity to educate and to spread light where there is darkness. I mean, I made a video about it that on Instagram got over 100,000 views, on Facebook got over 200,000 or 300,000 views, on YouTube even more. And so this video went viral in some spaces, but it's not enough. And I would have only hoped that Whoopi saw this video, understood it, really watched it, and hoped that she would have brought an individual on her platform, not necessarily myself, but any Jew, to really talk about those issues and to understand why she caused so much harm. Clearly she did something wrong, but I don't think it was articulated well enough, or the actions taken against her were appropriate in order for her to understand and to do a sort of tshuva, which is a recognition of the hurt that she made, and to fix it in order for things to become better.
Exactly. You mentioned that the best way to approach this is just come from the view of power, which I think people lean toward that mostly. Like, they think that if Whoopi was suspended for 2 weeks, it comes from the point of power. Now Jews have this power to suspend Whoopi Goldberg, if she says something like that on her program, to suspend her. But I lean mostly toward education. I like coalition that you mentioned with the rest of the world. And I think in order to create that coalition is realize that it's not just anti-Semitism, it's racism, it's genocide that should be prevented from every culture. Like, even the using the phrase anti-Semitism, I think that isolates the concept from all other hate-related concepts. And that could distribute to people not realizing that Holocaust or any other hate-related actions that you just mentioned was actually a genocide. Why do we have to use a different term, yet expect people to understand that it is really the same thing?
So I don't think it's the same thing. Now, of course, all forms of xenophobia and hatred have to be fought. And about Whoopi Goldberg being suspended, I think anyone that would have made a racist comment would at the very least be suspended, if not completely fired. So I'm not necessarily against her suspension, but I do think that the investment of time and energy should have been more into the education. In terms of it being different, I mean, at the end of the day, if someone is sick, if someone has, God forbid, chas v'shalom, a cancer, and they also have diabetes, and they also have other diseases, you have to cure those diseases very specifically. Even if you have two or more, you have to treat each one of them specifically for what they are. And anti-Semitism is very different than other forms of xenophobia, so it has to be focused specifically. Now, it doesn't mean we shouldn't focus and also treat the other problems in this world, and not just hatred. There's pollution, there's corruption, there's hatred, there's jealousy, there's materialism, there's people that are not free, people that don't have food, people that don't have shelter. There's a lot of issues that we need to deal in the world, but we need to deal specifically with the problems that we have. And if you look at anti-Semitism, the one thing that every extremist group agrees on, white supremacists, black supremacists, far left, far right, communist, capitalist, right, left, religious, secular, the one thing that all extreme hateful groups agree on is that the Jew is the problem. And other communities don't have that. You know, those that are against black people are white supremacists. Those that are against white people are black supremacists. Those that are against women are misogynists. Those that are against this side or that side. It's always another side that's the opposite of their side. But the Jewish people face a very particular and unique type of xenophobia that all extremes are actually against them. So I would disagree that we should generalize anti-Semitism as if it's part of the same thing. It's not a part of the same thing. It's very specific. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't also focus on healing the rest of the world from other hatreds that exist as well, that in themselves are also unique and particular when compared to others.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. I agree. It was a good explanation, and now I'm convinced. Before that, I was like, totally, because I see a lot of comments, like there are a lot of people, black people, who would say that they wish that Hitler finished the job and all the Jews were killed. And they don't realize, as I said again, that black people were killed during Holocaust as well. So it's lack of knowledge, and it's partially, I thought, maybe it's because we focused on Jewish people a lot and ignored the other 5 million lives that were lost. So maybe both of them, the way you explained it, we have to focus on the lives that were lost and the lives that might be lost if we don't something right at this time and prevent it. But at the same time, if we can collaborate with the rest of the world and you know, help them realize that all the hate-related movements is wrong. I don't know. I think it would be more helpful if we all come together as a generation and fight all the genocide acts. What do you think about it?
I mean, I agree with that. I do think that the education surrounding the Holocaust should be more inclusive to understanding the persecution and extermination of other groups of people that experienced that. But of course, the Nazis particularly exterminated and hunted down the Jews. That definitely was different than their intention with other communities. But that doesn't mean that other communities didn't also go through their experiences. And we shouldn't also shed light on that and also fight and combat those hateful and xenophobic movements that exist. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that one doesn't prevent the other. Like I said before, if you have a cancer and you have diabetes and you have a broken arm, you go to the hospital and you treat all of them. Mm-hmm. Of course, the ones that are most life-risking are the ones that you're going to focus on first to save the life immediately. But at the same time, in the same day, you're going to try to heal all the problems that you can heal.
Right.
So I don't think that one prevents the other. And I think there's too much of this victim Olympics and competition of who's suffering more and who's suffering less. It's not about that. We have to be very specific as to what's going on and administer solutions to end the situation. And it's not only about the what, but the why. A lot of people talk about this group is suffering, that group is suffering, this is what's happening. And it's very important to understand what. But if we don't understand why the what is happening and focus on understanding the why, then we're not going to be able to fix the what in order to actually change it from reoccurring. We have to also understand why things are happening and not just what is happening.
Rudy, besides the social media that you just mentioned, a few of them, I think people can follow you on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, all kind of social media platforms. But you travel around the world as well. Is that because you go for education, for to give them a speech, lectures? Why do you travel so much around the world? As a matter of fact, you are out of the country right now as well, right?
Yeah, I'm currently in Panama. I landed yesterday and I fly tomorrow. And I travel a lot because I'm trying to change the world. And in order to change the world, there's a lot of places in this world to change. It could be for a variety of reasons, for lectures, for talks, for meetings with important people, for different projects. I see it as, for me, I'm a Jewish rights activist. I also fight to correct things in the world, but this is particularly my current fight right now. This is, for me, what's most important for me, and it doesn't limit other people from helping and changing other things that they see a problem with. At the end of the day, I think the eyes that we have are really windows to a reflection of what our souls feel needs to be corrected. So different people see different problems because that is what their souls resonate with them to go and to correct. Now, I see problems that are facing the Jewish people, assimilation, anti-Semitism, lack of empowerment, lack of identity, lacking of united mission and vision within the land of Israel that unites people, the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians that we need to resolve because there's no future where Israelis or Palestinians disappear. So continuing pushing this narrative as if it's a zero-sum game, one of the other actually only invests in this conflict continuing and hurting both people, the idea of lost tribes, of lost communities of Jews, and Israelites that have been disconnected and spread across Africa, Asia, and South America that have yet to return and are currently suffering. So all of the activism and energy that I invest is to correct the problems that I see. And it could very well be that in years from now I see different problems or problems in a different way, because naturally we have to be open to the evolution and understanding of the truth that we see. But for whenever I'm traveling, it's always for helping making the world a better place in the way that I think is best in the time that I'm living.
That's great. While traveling around the world and going to all these countries because of what you fight anti-Semitism, have you ever encountered any problem? Is there anywhere that you went that they didn't like what you do and caused problem for you?
Yeah, I think particularly one example of that was recently in July. We went to Africa doing a documentary series called We Were Never Lost, which we're still in the production of. We just got back from Uganda. And very soon we're going to be going to Zimbabwe and to Tanzania and to Madagascar and Ethiopia. And we're doing a documentary series on the stories of these lost, disconnected Israelite Hebrew communities that were displaced into the whole world, and to bring their stories and who they are back to the consciousness of the world through this documentary series. We came to Nigeria in July to film the story of the Igbos, and unfortunately the government hates the Igbos and persecutes them and exterminates them in 1967. 3 million Igbos were exterminated every month. There are hundreds of Igbos that are killed left and right, exterminated. They're being oppressed. They're being imprisoned and abducted for nothing. And so we knew going to Nigeria was going to be very dangerous. It's arguably the most dangerous country in Africa. We took security precautions. We had security with us, and we didn't go to certain places that were too dangerous. We never posted pictures of where we were. But unfortunately, after 2 days being there, you had the media going crazy that you had, you know, foreigners, Israelis that were in the land. They started to spread all sorts of conspiracy theories, and the government / regime that is not so peaceful, let's just say, came and abducted us with 15 armed gunmen with black ski masks in our hotel, threw us in vans and held us in a cage for 2 weeks. The first week we had no food, only water. We're living in a situation with a cage full of rat feces and human urine and mold and bugs everywhere, you know, very unsanitary conditions. And we didn't have food for the first week. And after the first week, they moved us to a second cage where we were in the prison with basically Boko Haram terrorists as cellmates. And it was a constant struggle for survival, both mentally, physically, psychologically, in every single way. And Baruch Hashem, we were able to get out of there after 2 weeks due to political pressure that was put by Jews around the world and people who cared about our situation and our family members. And eventually the Nigerian government allowed us to leave. We were never arrested. We were never accused of anything. We never had a lawyer. We never had a phone call. There was no due process. They just saw this movie as a movie and a series that is seeking to empower our community that they deem to be their enemies. And it's not so surprising because usually the Jewish communities around the world are those that are attacked and triggered. And this is not just an experience that happened in North Africa and the Middle East and in Europe. It's also an experience that other communities of Israelites have experienced in Africa, in Asia, in South America, and in other places. So, you know, sometimes what you do can be dangerous, but I think everything happens for a reason. And I think the fact that we went through that hard experience allows the world, especially the Jewish world, to connect and understand what people have to face with every single day for generations over there. And, you know, what I have to say to the Igbos that are still facing that reality is that unfortunately or fortunately, I don't control the institutions. I don't have political power. I don't control the rabbinate in Israel. But I do have an ability to create shifts in pop culture and to use my platform to spread light where I see darkness. And I promise them that we are the last generation that doesn't know who you are. And the point of our project is to reconnect those that have been lost to us and not lost to themselves.
Wow. I didn't know that. So for the length of this was 2 weeks total, right?
Three weeks.
Okay. I'm so glad, thank God, that you're back safe and sound. And it's amazing that you're still continuing all your activities after the experience that you had. I think a lot of people would have been discouraged or afraid not to move forward anymore. But I think that gave you more, even more courage to do what you're doing and trying to bring peace, hopefully, to the world.
Yeah, they took away 3 weeks of my life, but I'm not going to let them take away anything else.
That's great. So was it just you? Because you said we. Who was with you in that those cages that you just mentioned?
We were three members of our team, me, Noam, and David, and we were taken for 3 weeks. David was released after the first week because he had a medical condition and had to go to the hospital, and the French embassy was able to extract him and to keep him in the embassy. So he was a total of 1 week. And me and Noam were the full 3 weeks there. And we managed to survive and to stay strong and to keep our heads up. And thankfully, the rest of the world put in efforts to get us out because it could have very well been months and if not years. You know, we had no sense of time or understanding when we'd get out, no stimulation, no information. You know, we didn't see colors for 3 weeks. We didn't see the outside for 3 weeks. We were completely put in a situation, you know, starved. And there were days where we complained. And because we complained too much, they locked us in a room and painted the whole room with fresh paint. So we're breathing in the whole night fresh paint and it's burning our insides. You know, this was not a very comfortable situation. It was very difficult. But in life, you're given tests and you have to be able to conquer those journeys. And for us, we took it in that way. And the moment we got out, we went right back to what we were doing. And like I said, they took our freedom and our rights and our life for 3 weeks. And that to me is enough. They're not going to take anything else.
Thank you so much for sharing with us. I have a question that it might sound a little bit political, and feel free not to answer if you don't want to. But these days with the vaccination and being mandatory and a lot of other regulations that comes with COVID, a lot of people are comparing that with what happened with the start of Holocaust. And they say, oh, that's how people's freedom were taken away. And, you know, they are trying to compare the two together. And a lot of people are like, what are you even thinking about comparing these two together? What is your view on this? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I don't think we should be comparing the Holocaust to this at all. I think it's very inappropriate, very insensitive. And we shouldn't be appropriating one experience to talk about something else. Now, the conversation of how these things are being done and the different countries imposing vaccination and regulations on different countries, you know, people can have different opinions on if this is right, on if this is wrong, and you can feel free to criticize it, but I don't think it should be compared to the Holocaust. For me, I'm not going to take a comment on if someone should take the vaccine or shouldn't take the vaccine. I think people should make their own research, their own decisions, and do what's right for them. I think people who are young and healthy are very low at risk, and I think people who are older are more at risk, so it should be based on what someone determines should be right. I do think people should be educated on, you know, the vaccination, that it's not just a, you know, form of the disease that's very low and that your body can easily build antibodies against, you know, like other vaccines we're used to. It's a very new RNA technology that is basically hacking your cells to create a protein that mimics and eventually create antibodies within the body. That can be a fascinating new technology and create advances, but it's brand new and people should know what they're taking in their bodies before they go and take it. So I'm not saying that people should take it, they shouldn't take it, they should make their own decision, but they should be educated on what it is, and we shouldn't have a society that is divisive and people who don't take it are being ostracized and hated on, and people who do take it are, you know, being seen as people following the system, and they're planting chips in your body and all sorts of ridiculous statements. I think it's important to have nuance. Some people, if they want to make the decision, if they want to do that, if that's best for you, if you've done your research, do what you think is right. If you've done your research and you don't want to take it because you don't think this is the right way, or you don't follow the demographics that can be harmed, or you already had it and currently have the antibody, so there's no even real point of you taking it, I think people should make the decisions on what's best with their current circumstances. And I'm very much so against the polarization of these issues that society tends to shove down our throats and to put some people on one side and other people on the other side. I think this is the MO of Western civilization, which is to divide and conquer. Even this idea that we have the left and the right, who decided that? Who said that there were two opinions? Right? There's so many opinions that this world has. Who decided that social values and justice and liberation and human rights has to be against economy and security and identity? Mm-hmm. You know, all these things are important and they're part of one. So I kind of reject these ideas that we should separate ourselves. We should be on the left. We should be on the right. I think we should all be a part of one and understand that we are all different. The same way within one body, you have different organs and different responsibilities that those organs serve. And even within the organs, you have different cells and different molecules and different atoms. But at the end of the day, we're one body, one family, one species, one ecosystem, one planet, one universe. We're all a part of one.
Wow.
So we have to have a balance between understanding the individual and the collective and not using one against the other.
Beautifully said. I agree 100%, and I really like it the way you put it. So we are coming to the end of today's program, and I really want to thank you one more time for dedicating your time, being with us today, especially now that you're out of the country on a different mission, but you still managed to give us the time and being with us today. Do you have anything else to add, or should we say goodbye to the audience?
I mean, I appreciate you, using your platform to spread light onto the struggles that the Jewish people face, and having a very holistic approach and trying to bring light on the platform. And I appreciate the viewers also for listening to these things and being interested in creating conversations around it. So I appreciate your platform, and I look forward to being able to speak again.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It was really great having you. دوستان عزیز، امیدوارم که برنامه امروز مورد توجهتون قرار گرفته باشه. تا برنامه آینده، روز خوش و خدا نگهدار.